As Dr. Bauer mentioned, covering more of the physiology aspect, Dr. DeLone is going to really cover more agronomic and soil background on cover crops. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Tyson. So I'm Paul DeLone. I'm with Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Vernon, north northwest Texas. Need to acknowledge Stan Beavers. He's the economist, so it's all his fault when it comes to numbers. He retired, so can't blame him any longer, I guess. He doesn't care anymore. So he retired 1st of September. Anyway, just some background on some cover crops in semi-arid regions of Texas. As Dr. Bauer said, you know, it's not new. There's been research conducted, and maybe these are some of the negative aspects of things we've seen from studies in that region, in the Rolling Plains region where I'm at, specifically Dozier et al. Noted that winter cover crops do not appear to be a viable option in that region due to limited soil moisture. For establishment and the removal of that soil moisture by the cover crops will hinder our lint yields following that. Dr. Todd Bobman noted lint yields being lower in our region following cover crops. Dr. Keating out in the southern high plains concluded it could be expected to attain a protected ground cover about 69% of the time in that area. And the big if there is if the proper species is sown and if the fall rainfall comes to establish that. He also found that several legume species failed to inadequate moisture in being able to establish those in that region. And then Dozier also noted that legume cover crops in the Rolling Plains did not appear to be provide adequate biomass or provide high enough end contributions to justify the seed cost and the planting cost for legumes. So those are some of the negative things we've seen, some challenges. Maybe I shouldn't say negative, but the challenges that we've seen in our regions. Maybe some more positive aspects of research in that area. There has been research by Dr. John Tsai in that region showing higher soil moisture availability in conservation tillage systems which had cover crops compared to those without cover crops and conventional tillage systems. And multiple year studies in our region have shown that no impact to cover crops on cotton lint yields, and this primarily in the irrigated systems. But it all comes back to soil moisture and such environments. So practices that are perceived to reduce the capability of soils to capture rainfall will, of course, hinder adoption. With the introduction of the Soil Health Initiative by USDA and RCS in the fall of 2012, cost-share programs became available in our region and the county that the research is being done. Cost-share was provided at $48 per acre to cover seed costs in that program. So with these cost share programs by NRCS, and I know just in Southwest Oklahoma, I think it was high, or not Southwest Oklahoma, but Oklahoma in general, is over $70 an acre. So this generated a lot of interest in cover crops, enrollment in that program, and people giving that try. So there's a lot of questions that came about over the last 4 or 5 years about cover crops and how it can fit into our environments. So this is the region talking about today, North Texas, Texas Rolling Plains. It's on the border of that semi-arid region, just under right around 25 inches of rainfall. Extreme temperatures in the summer, hot and dry, typically. Monoculture systems are the norm in our region. Cotton and wheat are two primary cash crops. Predominantly dryland production, less than 50% of the crops are irrigated in our region. But that little acreage does account for over 50% of the cash receipts, so it's an important production area. So there's a lot of background and history and with cover crops in our region, and most of that has been single species grass cover crops, basically to keep the sand from blowing, as the locals will say, using grain cover crops in the wheat systems, being rye or wheat being the most popular. So back in 2008, we began looking at a terminated wheat cover crop and cotton system. So left to right, that would be your standard conventional till system. And the middle is cotton emerging in no-till. And then lastly, we have cotton emerging in no-till system with a terminated wheat cover crop. So we looked at the net return for the first 3 years which should be considered a transitioning system, not well established, but this was the net return for that system over a three-year period. The green being no-till without a cover crop, blue being no-till with a cover crop. No significant differences there, and both of those no-till systems with or without a cover crop, and that being the wheat cover crop, was significantly greater than the conventional till system. So this showed that, and this is averaged over different deficit irrigation regimes, ranging from zero to up to 100%. So this is the average of those together. But we're finding that we could justify seed costs if we had a cover crop program and over a conventional tillage system. So this gave us a little hope and insight that this was economically feasible in our region for a wheat cover crop. And these are the same plots 7-8 years later. This is from 2015, and these are three different water levels, deficit irrigation levels across the bottom. Those are the irrigation levels in inches at the bottom, ranging 5.5 to just under 10 inches. Kind of what we've seen over time is the more deficit and the water levels, it seems like the no-till with or without a cover crop seems to shine a little bit better, mainly due probably to greater infiltration of that system. But in the low and medium irrigation levels, we saw slight numerical improvements in lint yields over all the other tillage treatments. So I talked about infiltration, and this is infiltration from those plots. Looking at infiltration on your left, the green is that no-till with a terminated wheat cover crop. And we come in, we do single ring infiltrometers, time one, come back and do time two, so let that system equilibrate. But kind of what we've found is if you're doing no-till alone in a continuous cotton system, you know, the question became, well, is that enough? We're not adding residue to that system. Cotton's a very low residue cropping system. When it's a continuous system, you know, we're not seeing a benefit of no-till alone in regards to infiltration over conventional tillage or strip tillage. But when we added a terminated wheat cover crop to that system, we doubled or tripled our infiltration rates. And, you know, I'm just a soil scientist, so Dr. Ale, he's an expert hydrologist. He came in and he used a little bit better methods than I did, and luckily he found very similar results. So on those same plots. So we've seen a vast improvement in infiltration where we had that cover crop in that system. And then on the right, that's penetration resistance, where we alleviate that plow pan. The blue and the green line would be your no-till with and without a cover crop compared to strip tillage and conventional tillage. So we've seen improvement in physical properties by doing no-till with that cover crop, and we've been able to have better economic returns or maintain our yields and slight improvement in yields. So starting 2011, we wanted to expand the role of cover crops in our region, mainly to see if we can meet nitrogen needs. There's a debate on if dryland cotton should even, if you should even be wasting your time to fertilize dryland cotton systems in our region. So typically may apply about 30-40 pounds of nitrogen would be the 100% sufficiency rating. So we were looking at, well, instead of applying fertilizer, what if we plant little hume cover crops that would be roughly the same cost as nitrogen fertilizer? And that's back when nitrogen fertilizer was getting close to $1 a pound, it seemed like. So we started a study, no-till without a cover, conventional tillage without a cover, bedding that system, and then no-till with different cover crop species. We began looking at Austrian winter field pea, planting that at 35 pounds per acre, crimson clover at 20 pounds per acre, hairy vetch, 20 pounds per acre, wheat at 30 pounds per acre. And then we added a multi-species mix in 2012, and that was as a result of the NRCS Soil Health Initiative, which their recommendations in our county to get cost share at that time, you had to have at least a four-species mix to qualify for a cost share program. So mixed species mixes were really being pushed at that time. So we implemented one, planted that 40 pounds per acre. It included rye at 10 pounds per acre, plus wheat at 10, plus turnips, crimson clover, Austrian winter field pea, and hairy vetch. Since 2013, we've backed that down to 30 pounds per acre. And what we found over time, I'm not going to show you the details today, but really we had a four-way species mix is what we had. We were planting a 7-8 species mix but only four of those were doing anything. So we've eliminated turnips. We put radishes in there in the past. We eliminated that and crimson clover. So the last year or two, we've just planted rye, wheat, vetch, and peas. And in our region, we're planting after cotton harvest. So that's usually last week, October, at the earliest that we're planting the cover crops, because we plant after harvest. And sometimes it can be as late as around the 10th of December. So it's not an ideal planting time for things such as crimson clover, turnips, or radishes. So for the dryland system, we're not adding any fertilizer. We had pretty healthy nitrate concentration when we began the study, about 80 pounds available in the top 2 foot. Then we chemically terminate our cover crops in late April, and primarily in leave about 30 days before we plant cotton. So we're allowing about 30 days for that system to recover. Of course, we start a study, and it's a good time to start one because we're in exceptional drought conditions. So if we're going to see if anything works, this would be a good time to do it, right? So, but as we start this study, this is when we entered into our exceptional drought. That lasted well over 3 years, it seemed like, but very tough conditions. Now, going from here, I'm going to show some results that may be somewhat promising. So I'm going to show you cover crop performance. And we were able to achieve, and basically we didn't have failure for some of ours. And they've been shown to be resilient and what I would call, the tried and true cover crops that seem to work very well even in adverse conditions. So economic methods, did the whole enterprise budget, looking at net income would equal total revenue minus total expenses. Expenses are going to vary mostly by seed cost and harvest cost, even have depreciation in there. I've been asked if we included the cost share numbers in there. We did not include any NRCS cost share programs in there. Total revenue included lint value plus the cotton seed value. So just to show you some biomass production, and this is spring 2012, which was during exceptional drought condition. We had some rainfall in March, and we were able to establish it in the fall, but that following March had, just like an inch, 2 inches of rainfall. It really had these cover crops make it through in the spring. And if we can get a rainfall in March, late March, early April, we have an explosive growth over the last 4 to 6 weeks, and we can tame pretty good biomass. But biomass numbers for that wheat, Osterman, or field pea, and veg, which seem to be the best, 1,500 to a little over 2,000 pounds of biomass. This first year, we included sun hemp, where we planted it in the spring, tried to get 60 days of growth. We've since eliminated that. It didn't grow very well. We couldn't kill it, and it was still there in September, it seemed like. But and it's a very high seed cost. This is following year in 2013, and this was a fairly good planting conditions in the fall, very, very dry through end of March, and had rainfall just kind of in time and maybe around the 1st of April. But again, that mixed species, followed by the Austin winter field pea, performed very well, followed by the vetch and the wheat. Crimson clover, we're just planting so late, we usually have poor stand establishment with our crimson clover, and just year in, year out, poor performance. I just want to show you what a good year would look like if we had the rainfall that we need, where we produced over 3,500 pounds of biomass, and that's good for us in our seeding rates. I've seen a couple talks today where they're planting 130 pounds their cover crop. I'm not going to recommend that in our region. We just can't afford to do that, and no telling how much soil moisture we're going to pull planting at that rate. But those numbers on the bottom of the screen, that's our nitrogen accumulation, nitrogen above ground biomass. So with our Austrian winter field pea there, with about 3,300 pounds of biomass, we accumulated 122 pounds of nitrogen per acre in that system. So our legume cover crops are doing what they're supposed to do. Austrian winter field pea, hairy veg are pretty consistent year in, year out. And our mixed species seems to be doing well. And our wheat has been somewhat variable from one year to another. So just a couple slides on stored soil water, what's going on with our stored soil water. We have neutron probes in all of our plots, and we read those every 2 weeks throughout the year. So this is December 2012. going through October of the next year. But this is late April when we terminated our cover crops, and as you can see, there's one treatment down here, and this is that mixed species where we planted 40 pounds per acre, had 10 pounds of rye in it, and we found out that rye really likes water. So we backed that treatment off in since years, and what we found, if you look at the top 60 centimeters, you see a little bit closer, you see these legume cover crops be closer to the rye, but what we're seeing is that rye goes down deeper, greater than 60 centimeters, and our legume cover crops don't seem to be pulling water from that far down in the profile. But these are our legume and wheat, and then this would be our no-cover crop treatments, no-till and conventional tillage. So this is over the four-year period, and this is year one, and this is in the upper 2 feet. So if you look at the gaps, you see they're close here. There's the legumes, there's that mixed species. But the thing I want to point out, this is exceptional drought conditions. We see that big gap in soil moisture. These are our non-cover crop treatments. These are our cover crop treatments. But within that 30 days in our region, unlike maybe out further in West Texas and Southern High Plains, we generally have a planting rain in our region. Get a good 1.5-2 inch rain in May. And if we get that, we seem to be recovering our soil moisture if we can get that rain, because we recharge better where we did have the cover crops, and it's kind of back to status quo when we go into our planting. So over time, that gap has diminished. This is year two. There's the highest, of course, peak, the highest biomass producers are going to have the greatest water use. But again, you can see the deficit there, that we had that rain in May, and you can see the spike in infiltration and getting into planting. All the soil moisture is very similar. This is year four, actually. And again, you can see hairy vetch and the peas did very well. But again, the lines all come back together, and you see that each and every year. So our infiltration, we do capture it. Yes, it does use water, but we seem to be able to recover it if we get that rain. So this is lint yields over a three-year period in our dry land system. The yellow would be wheat, following wheat cover crop. The red is the mixed species. The blue, Austrian or field pea. The purple would be hairy vetch. The green is going to be crimson clover. The black is no-till, and the gray is conventional till. That's the variability of that first year, but every year, really. But statistically speaking, we haven't seen any differences in lint yield among treatments. So 2015 was a wet year. Everything's very similar. 2014 was dry, but had July rains, about 5 inches in July, that kind of saved everything. So there's some response behind our cover crops compared to our non-cover crop treatments, where we had the legumes in the mixes. So we've kind of maintained our yields. Some years we may bump it up a little bit. So if you look at expenses, this can get a little bit intense here, but just things to point out. No-till is typically the lowest expense system over all other systems. And generally, our wheat system is our lowest cover crop system, and I'll show that on the next slide. And that's due to total seed costs. So if you look at total seed costs, this is the cost of the cotton seed plus the cover crop seed. So of course, conventional till and no-till are going to be the same each year, because we're not planting cover crops, we're just planting cotton seed. So that's the cotton seed cost. Okay, so just to tell you cost, crimson clover, what we're planting, it runs from around $30 an acre. Hairy vetch is running anywhere from $28 to $35 an acre to plant at 20 pounds per acre. Our Austrian winter field pea is $18 to $24 an acre. Our mixed species is in that $18 to $24 per acre each and every year. And then our wheat, planting 30 pounds per acre, that's about an $8 per acre cost. So that wheat cost is, of course, going to be lower each and every year. Now, when you get into legumes, that cost can be driven by... I've had success over the last couple of years by using pre-coated seed. So you can get the seed where the inoculant is pre-coated. It's really easy to handle. It has a longer shelf life. You get away from the powder. But we've had pretty good luck with that. Of course, the seed cost is Austrian winter field pea will jump up from about 50 cents a pound to up to 70 cents a pound. Your vetch can go from $1.90 and maybe bumped up to about $2.20, $2.30. So it's a little bit extra, but I've had pretty, it's easy to handle. I like it. We had some good inoculation. It took 3 or 4 years after we got past that drought before we started seeing any inoculation in these systems. So we've had good inoculation the last 2 years, and that's because we've had the moisture in the system. So net income for our dry land systems over 3 years. Real variable from year to year, but like in 2014, one thing I'd point out, that hairy vetch had a high seed cost. The question was, well, can we recover that? There's no significant differences, but you can see we are recovering our cost there, which was nice to see in 2014. 2015, a little bit more variable, lower yields on that hairy vetch. But if you look at a three-year average, expenses and net return over a three-year average, and this be 2013, 14, and 15, we're seeing no significant differences in our net return for the dry land system. So we're pulling down soil moisture. We have higher seed costs because we're including cover crop seed. But our net returns from a statistical perspective are not statistically different. Of course, if you tell a farmer they're losing $30 an acre, they may not understand variability. But anyway, it's very similar over time. So that was somewhat encouraging. What is it we see this year? We haven't incorporated the 2016 into our economics yet. Dr. Bowman, maybe I'll have it by the Red River Crops Conference for you, but this is 2016 dry land, our highest yields numerically, no significant differences in yields, but the hairy vetch and the Austrian winter field peas had the highest yield, followed by the no-till. And I'm not showing you soil health numbers today or nutrient data, but we do see higher nitrate levels in the top 4 inches of the soil following our Austrian winter field pea and hairy vetch cover crops. So we're seeing the benefit of that, and we're seeing a trend in some soil microbial characteristics as well. So I'll touch on irrigated cotton systems. Much more forgiving. We're looking at the same systems. We have no-till, conventional till, no-till with wheat in a mix under leaf irrigation. Again, this is soil moisture. This is that first year. We pulled it down with cover crops, but you can see that spike and improvement in infiltration from that first year when we started irrigating and received the rain. So we've recovered that, and if you look at that over time, that gap's getting smaller over time, but back to status quo when we get into planting. So irrigation is much more forgiving than a dry land system. And if you look throughout the year, on some of these, that blue line is actually conventional tillage. So cover crops are, the soil moisture is a little bit higher in the cover crop systems. Not statistically, but we're recovering in that system is kind of the theme that we've seen. So late yields, as you expect, be very similar. We're not changing soil moisture. What we did see in the irrigated system is in the third year, we saw a significant response to cover crops. So we saw significantly higher yields behind the mixed species cover crop and the wheat cover crop compared to the no-till and conventional till. So 3 years in, we saw a significant response. Total expenses, since harvest cost is a expense, the seed cost, higher yields in 2015 led to higher expenses for the cover crop systems. But the net income, not significant until that third year where we saw a significant improvement in net returns for our mixed species in our wheat cover crop system compared to our conventional till and no-till systems without a cover crop. So 3 year average for our irrigated system, this would be expenses, no-till without a cover crop having the lowest expenses compared to the other systems. And then our net return, very similar across all treatments over a three-year period, slightly higher with our two cover crop systems. So what did 2016 look like? Our no-till without a cover crop did well this year, but our mixed species no-till was very similar, followed by the wheat cover crop and numerically lower yields were from the conventional till system. So, what have we seen so far? You know, select cover crop species have consistently performed over time, even under drought conditions that we had, and we're planting later than what we should, so especially the legumes. But the Austrian winter field peas and the hairy vetch seem to be able to germinate, persevere over the winter, and then take off in spring. So they've been very resilient and performed year in, year out. Stored soil moisture can be significantly lower due to cover crops about the time of termination. However, that stored soil moisture is restored by cash crop planting if, big if, adequate rainfall is received. And of course, if it's an irrigated system, that's not an issue. And within dryland irrigated cotton systems, net returns were not significantly different among treatments when averaged over a 3-year period. But I do feel there's potential greater risk involved in the dryland rain fed systems, which is not anything novel there. So, bottom line conclusion, you know, cover crops have potential with educated management decisions. And, you know, what do I mean by that? You have to realize where you are, what your system is. You know, maybe you can't come to a meeting like this and see somebody planting 120 pound per acre cover crop seeding rate and expect to go back to semi-arid environment and do the same thing. So just make some educated decisions, and I think if you're smart about it and you do things at the right time, I think it can pay off. You're definitely not going to hurt your system from what we've seen. So with that, I'll conclude and take any questions if we have time.
Thanks, Paul. We do have time for a couple of questions.
Go ahead, Randy. We are. We soil test twice a year, so we have all that soil test numbers. And, you know, what we've seen from in the dry land, behind the legumes, we see an accumulation of nitrate in the top 2 to 4 inches. So we do see higher nitrate.
Are you adjusting your fertilizer?
Well, the dry land, we're not fertilizing at all.
Oh,
they,
not even,
nothing.
No nitrogen.
No nitrogen.
That
is the last results I've showed. The very first was drip, but everything there toward the end was pivot.
Okay, so on the drip, have you ever got any issues with lack of moisture from the season?
You know, we've been very fortunate. We've had no problem with stand establishment when we did. It was the year where we had the freeze May 3rd and very cold soil temperatures, so it wasn't related to cover crops. So we've been able to have good stand establishment each and every year.
Right.
Thanks. Dr. E. Blair.
Yeah, a quick thing, Paul. All your driving or in your system you first talked about, you show the bed. Are you running on bed?
Yes.
Okay, how do you establish your cover crop on the bed system?
Well, we're not planting cover crops in the bedded system. So that bedded system is for the conventional till only. Everything else is flat, no-till ground.
Are you broadcasting the seed?
We're drilling the seed. So we harvest, we shred stalks, and we go right in and plant. It does not improve cost share program. Yes. Now we do on the legumes. Usually we try to spray straight Roundup, glyphosate, and we've noticed that that's not going to work for our winter field peas and our hairy vetch. So we usually spike it a little bit with either 2,4-D or dicamba to get a good yield on that. Roundup alone is not going to cut it. We try to roll the crimper too. We don't have enough biomass. I have one for sale if anybody's interested.
Thanks,
Tyson.